This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Hello, and welcome to a very exciting episode, episode 5 of the Star Trek Picard cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And why is it exciting? As if you need to know.
As if you need to ask.
where you been? We are covering the very first episode of Star Trek Picard, season 1, episode 1, titled Remembrance. But before we get started, I'm just going to say this one little thing for you new listeners. If you picked up on us from, we were on a YouTube playlist earlier this week for Captain Picard Day. And so I know a lot of you may have listened to us for the very first time this week. Well,
yay!
What you're going to get today is what you will normally get from us, which is, I think, a very special mix, which I kind of call feedback first. So, in other words, we are going to take the feedback that we get from you. We're going to mix it in with our own observations and that. And we are going to exhaustively cover this episode to the best of our ability. So, if you're looking for a 30-minute summary discussion, which I know some podcasts do, you might as well stop listening to us because you're going on at least 2-hour ride.
Probably 2 hours, maybe more.
Maybe more. But anyway, let's get started with it. Remembrance. We have a lot of writer's credits for this sucker.
Yeah, that's quite a mouthful.
The teleplay is by Akiva Goldsman and James Duff. And I say and because it's the word and. And I'll get to that in a minute. The story is by Akiva Goldsman, ampersand, instead of and, Michael Chabon, ampersand, instead of and, Kirsten Beyer, ampersand, Alex Kurtzman, and the letter and, James Duff. Now, what the heck
is the word and?
Yeah. What the heck does this mean, you might ask? Well, there's a whole thing within the Writers Guild about TV credits and, you know, motion picture writing credits. And it's basically, it goes like this. When credit is accorded via an ampersand, you are part of a team. If they use the and instead of an ampersand, what that tells you is that you wrote at a different stage along with everybody else. So in other words, this James Duff, who's an executive producer, he got the and credit instead of the ampersand credit. And that basically means he kind of did the final like cleanup work, but he did it separately from the rest of the team. So it's all confusing. I get that. But basically, yeah, he was the rewriter. So, anyway, that there's a whole thing about that because of, you know, like arbitration and stuff like that. Who gets credited for what? So they do all that crazy stuff.
Well, you have to have rules so that people don't get butt hurt.
Right, right. Because people don't need help with getting butt hurt.
Butt hurt.
That is so true. They find all sorts of ways to do it themselves. Anyway, directed and the next episode, I believe the next two, originally was announced that she was directing the first two, but I believe she's actually directing the first three episodes. Hannah Lee M. Culpepper. And if you're wondering on that pronunciation, her name is spelled Hanelle, like H-A-N-E-L-L-E, but I've heard her in several different podcasts and interviews where it's specifically pronounced Hanalee. So that's what it is. And another thing that I noticed, and this was the same as the last short track, created by Akiva Goldsman, ampersand Michael Chabon, ampersand Kirsten Beyer, ampersand Alex Kurtzman. So they are the co-creators and they worked as a team on it. So very interesting. Runtime was 46 minutes and 7 seconds. And the description, at the end of the 24th century and 14 years after his retirement from Starfleet, Jean-Luc Picard, Sir Patrick Stewart, is living a quiet life on his vineyard, Chateau Picard, when he is sought out by a mysterious young woman, Dage Issa-Briones, or Issa-Briones. I don't know what it is yet. I think it might be Issa. I don't know.
That makes more sense, Issa.
Yeah. In need of his help, he soon realizes she may have a personal connection to his own past. That's TV 14 with a violence note, air date of January 23rd, 2020. So, we did get a Spot the 47 reference, sort of. Brian from Hawaii put one in, and he said, did you notice the item number for the painting is 227? Add the first two digits together, and you get 47. And I'm like,
reaching!
Yeah, I would
want it to be there real bad, but I just don't think it is. Besides that, it was item 227.67. So what does that mean?
I would say close.
Man.
I would say close, but I would say
that's exactly right.
Yeah, I think it's
it was a good effort.
Yeah, it's as close as anything came, and I did see the numbers 4 and the number 7. On screen at the same time, but they weren't next to each other. So, and I even
when
saw
that. When did you see?
I was, of course, digging in, and I looked like when Picard was
which
entering.
Rewatch was that?
I actually didn't watch this one 17 times like you might expect. I've only seen it 3. So
what? That's only one more time than me,
Ruthie. You know I've had a bad couple of days, so.
I know.
Yes, my enjoyment of this episode was somewhat ruined by a personal / family emergency that ended up turning out to be nothing, but it did prevent me from watching the episode a few more times.
So it wasn't really ruined. You just didn't get to rewatch it as many times as you wanted to.
Yeah, so I only saw it 3 times. But anyway.
Aw.
Doesn't matter, because I'm going to see it another 47 times, I'm sure. Speaking of that, I thought I had found a 47. I was convinced of it, but I didn't find it. But I want to throw it out there for listeners, because I think at some point we're going to see this. The number of credits that play during the opening credits... This time, I counted the number of names during the opening credits, and I got 43. Now, if you think about it, not all the actors are in the opening credits right now. There's only 4 in the opening credits. So I bet you, very soon, we're going to have a set of opening credits where there are 47 credits. So look out for it.
Oh, my goodness. I just am not sure how important 47 is to this set of writers, so... I'm not really sure we're going to get a whole lot of 47 action.
We're going to get this. Show. I mean, we've gotten them in Star Trek Discovery, so we're going to get them here.
Yeah, but they weren't nearly as rampant.
I am convinced that if I look at this on a 4K screen, I will find a 47. I just couldn't find it. I just couldn't find it on my monitor at 1080p. That's only a 24-inch monitor. So, you know, if I blew this up on my 55-inch 4K, I might have been able to find one, but I couldn't. But anyway.
Oh, man.
So I think I know the answer for this. Ruthie, what did you think of this episode?
I liked it.
You liked it?
I liked it a lot.
You only liked it a lot?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
You didn't love it?
Well, sure. It was great.
It's reminds me of, like, you know, when one romantic partner is trying to seek to see if the other romantic partner is going to say, I love you back.
Fishing.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, what would you give this episode?
I would give this episode 9.9 out of 10 because I'm leaving room for improvement.
That's fair. I was tempted to give it a 9.9, but I don't even think I can do it with a straight face. So I'm going to say 10 former Starfleet admirals nursing their offended dignity. Quite honestly, I loved him saying that. That was nursing his offended dignity. Anyway.
Yeah. He's always been very good at self-reflection. So
yeah,
I appreciated that.
Anyway, to me, I thought that this is the best first episode, pilot, whatever you want to call it, that Star Trek's ever had. And I think it's true by a wide margin. It was beautiful. It was well-written. It was well-acted, well-directed, beautiful special effects, beautiful cinematography. I mean, what can we say? I'm so happy to be podcasting this show with you, Ruthie. This is just going to be, the next 10 weeks are going to be an absolute treat.
It's going to be awesome.
It is. All right. So we have listener ratings. Why don't you start?
Okay, Steve says 8 out of 10 twinsies.
Brian from Hawaii says, I give it 9.9 out of 10 data daughters.
James the Augmented Sailor says, OMG, 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 mind blown. Remembrance is 10 T Earl Grey decuffs that should be switched to double calves.
Yep.
Yeah, that was pretty. I was happy with the T Earl Grey, but he didn't say hot. He said decaf. I was like, what?
Alex from New Jersey is next, and he says 10 make it so's.
Steve from Texas says 10. I don't want the game to end.
I don't either.
Me neither.
Kyle from Chicago, who is, of course, a co-host on Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Kyle.
He says, 10 out of 10, making it so's. I see a pattern.
Yep. Daniel from the UK says, solid 10 out of 10 from me.
Fred from the Netherlands says, 8 out of 10, confusions about which deception to employ.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was good. Mark from New York says 10 out of 10 pieces of the puzzle that makes up Jean-Luc Picard to create a suspenseful new Star Trek series.
And of course, we'll give a shout out to Mark as well, who's my co-host on Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. And the Walking Dead Talk Through and was actually one of the panelists from last week, as well as Fred and
James
and
LT.
LT, who's next. And he says, going to give this one 9.9 out of 10 emotional fans. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong.
Okay. Rick from Cleveland says, this is bordering on a perfect launch for Picard. I rank it 9.8 out of 10 Queens of Hearts.
He still gave it a 0.2 deduction, though.
Well, yeah, I'm sure his rating was arbitrary.
All right, let's go for our yeses.
Yes.
I still love that.
I do too.
Okay. Brian from Hawaii says, this was a near perfect episode for me. So really, almost everything was a yes. Starting at the beginning, the beauty shot of the Enterprise D was absolutely stunning, and I loved seeing the 10 forward set again. Data's appearance was much improved over the trailers, thankfully. The shots of San Francisco were quite nice, and I was impressed by the Starfleet archives. Seeing that Picard saved the Picard Day banner is both a surprise and a treat. By the way, I believe Data made Lol in 2366, so he painted this 3 years later in 2369 while still serving on the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the callback to Maddox and synths sets up so many questions that I can't wait to see answered going forward.
Now, I'm wondering if Data painted those paintings during Birthright, because if you remember, that was a time where he was painting with both hands. And
yeah, but wasn't he mainly painting about his dreamscapes?
He was. And I just had that. That is coincidentally the episode where I stopped my rewatch. So not stopped, but, you know, temporarily suspended my rewatch. And I went back and watched that scene, but he did not paint a figure like that in that particular episode, but that was in 2369, so I'm imagining it was around that time, but I'm guessing we did not actually see this painting until now.
Yeah.
Paintings until now. And I guess one had the face and one did not. Is that right? How I understood it.
That's what I saw as well.
Yeah. All right. James, the augmented sailor, says, immediate tie-in to Discovery with this is a Ian boyfriend. And yeah, I noticed that too. So you people that think that Discovery is not canon, you can suck it. And I don't mean that, you know, in an offending way. But I'm sure there are some listeners that have had some issues with Discovery, and, you know, maybe even a few of them that won't agree that it's canon. But I hate to say it, but you may not like it, but it's canon. So,
Yeah.
And Zahians were first shown in the second season of actually was shown in the short trek, Runaway, and then the same character came back on, was it season 2, episode 13?
Something.
Yeah. Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1. So, anyway.
It was pretty spectacular.
Yeah. And that character, I don't remember his name. I don't think we heard his name. Anyway, the boyfriend, he didn't, like, put on his little cloaking device. So, because remember Poe, she had that little cloaking device thing, or, you know, where she could, like, disappear. So he didn't do that.
Yeah, well, I don't think he was expecting to get stabbed through the chest.
He did not have time. And he didn't like, he didn't put out his...
taken by surprise.
Yeah, and he didn't put out his little spurs or whatever on his back.
I mean...
He was pretty much dead.
Millisecond to turn around and go...
pretty much dead, I know. Just things I noticed. Shot of Worf and other TNG Klingons looking like TNG Klingons during the opening of the interview.
That's because those were specific screenshots from those TNG episodes.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, that ties into what Alex Kurtzman said, you know, recent. I think he said that at the TCA's, like, weekend before last, where he was asked about, you know, Klingons, and he said, yeah, if Worf comes, specifically about Worf, and if he comes back, he's going to look like Worf. And I thought, oh, thank God.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Because if you haven't been listening to us, that's the one thing above all others that we just really think was dumb about Discovery. They should not have changed the look of the Klingons.
Not that drastically.
Anyway, not that drastically.
It had been drastically changed enough previously, so.
And they've changed them back somewhat, but they still. They
modified their ridiculous changes.
Right.
But, you know, there's only so much you can do when you screw up to fix it. So they just kind of have to live with it. So.
Yeah. But I think we'll end up seeing that, because he also mentioned that we'd see species diversification, and we're already starting to see that with the Romulans, because I noticed Saban, he's got like a, he's got more of a forehead ridged forehead, and Laris does not.
Right. different.
And by the way, I'll just say this now. I love Laris. Actually, I love them both. I love those two characters already. I just know that they seem to be pure of heart, which is kind of funny because they're Tal Shiar.
I know, right? You wouldn't think, but
Yeah, and if that's a spoiler to you, sorry, but that's been established in the countdown, the Picard countdown comic book, the first two issues, and I posted actually a screen capture of it in the Facebook group today. So anyway,
right, I guess that's what happens when you're faced with the annihilation of your entire race.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, I think that the thing that's unwritten about or unstated about like Picard's resignation and that is, I think he still tried to help them, and you know, he probably did whatever he could while not being in Starfleet anymore. And I'm guessing that put him in even higher stead with them and than before. Like, you know, the fact that he did this was enough for them to say, you know, you saved us when no one else would have.
Right.
We will devote the rest of our lives to you, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. He probably called in a lot of chips to get that done too.
I can only imagine. James's last yes is number one gets a yes just for being a handsome pity. Anytime he appears, it's an automatic yes. Yes.
Okay. Kyle from Chicago says, it was everything I hoped for and more. There was just the right amount of setup and the pacing was just right. And I love number one. Pitties are the best dogs ever.
Yeah, I was going to say this with my rating, but I held it back to say it here. This, I thought, there are times when, you know, I mentioned on the roundtable actually where I was like starting to worry that, oh, I made it up in my head that this is, you know, going to be so good. How can it live up to it? Well, it was so good that it exceeded my expectations, you know, so I'm so very happy right now. It's wonderful. Rick from Cleveland says, so many yeses. Great things abound in this episode. He says, Patrick Stewart deserves an Emmy for this. I must say, I totally agree with that. And I think that from what I've seen, he's got a legitimate chance for it with this. I mean, how could they deny this show writing and directing and, you know, Emmy nominations, at least? I have to say.
I don't know. We'll see.
The Picard we saw leading up to the interview was a man deeply haunted, content to his life at Chateau. Yeah. Content to his life at Chateau. I know how to say Chateau. I'm French, for sakes. Anyway. The Picard we saw leading up to the interview was a man deeply haunted, content to his life at Chateau Picard, but clearly haunted by many things. The loss of Data, the attack on Mars, that the recanted support of Starfleet for the Romulan refugees, all clearly wearing on him. How he could shift from gentle wisdom to passionate determination so quickly. This is Picard at his best. Amen.
Indeed.
Yes, on the writing and callbacks to what came before. Mentioning Bruce Maddox by name and having him be the likely creator of Daj and her sister was a great way to tie to the past. Whether we wind up seeing Maddox or not, it was smart to make the character relevant to the story. I mentioned Maddox in a previous episode. I was suspecting that the rogue synths were actually made by Maddox, and it appears to be correct. Looks like I got that. So I know that he hasn't had any credits like on IMDb in a few years now, but as far as I know, he's still like a working actor. I think he like teaches acting now. Brian Brophy is his name that played Maddox.
Oh, yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him. And it would be kind of cool, I think. That would be a great tie-in. Because that was, I think, one of the best episodes of the show. One that I think has meant even more and more and more as time has gone on. And I would probably say that this was the best, like, early episode of Next Gen. You know, because it came, like, fairly early in season two, like, first half of season two.
You're talking about The Measure of a Man.
The Measure of a Man, yes.
Yeah.
So...
It was a pretty spectacular episode. It was a really heavy hitting with the hot button topics, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, like the deep dive into the self-determination and you know, whether or not Data was free to choose, basically.
Yeah.
And
if a person was property. It's pretty much
what
they were talking about.
Yeah. And
heavy stuff.
And it seems like that story is going to play heavy into this series. So,
Yeah. Which is not surprising considering how passionate Picard was about that at the time that that episode occurred. So,
Yes, on Klingons looking like Klingons, we get pictures of Worf and others with no modification to retcon anything. Perfect, just let it be. And already the races of Romulans appear to be evident with Picard's companions at the chateau and Dodge's assailants. We see forehead contour, no forehead contour, acid spitting, and I guess we'll see more variation. Yeah, I don't know about the acid spitting, if that has anything to do with the Romulans or not.
I think that was not... specifically a Romulan. I think that was like a suicide pill.
Yeah, I was going to say like a cyanide pill.
Except yeah, exactly.
A cyanide pill that you could spit at, you know, your victim.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much a one-shot thing. Like, I don't know. Okay, I'll get to that.
Yeah. And he also says, I wonder if we'll see Reemans. Yeah, I wondered that myself, actually. The Reemans.
I guess it will depend on if the people doing the show remember about them.
Well, of course, you know, the Reemans were only shown in Nemesis, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if we see them at some point. All right. Next is Fred.
All right. Fred from the Netherlands says that Dodge's boyfriend is Zahian, just like Poe in the very first Short Trek. I really love that species, especially the eye blinking. The fact that the Romulan reclamation site is in a Borg cube. Interesting twist. And Brian was right with his prediction that the synthetics were made by Maddox.
That's more to
Yay.
Me.
Yay.
I'm feeling really good about my predictions at this point, actually, but I'll get to that in a minute.
All right.
LT from NC says all of the subtle things that hooked in the story, the archive room with the Picard day sign, the ship models, the Bat'leth and the dagger, the painting, they did an amazing job slipping in the known and familiar to get us into the story as it is now. Yes, I totally agree. And I tried to write down what some of those things were in the archive. I have them in my notes later on. All right. That's it for our listener yeses. What about your yeses, Ruthie?
I liked in the opening scene, I liked the song that they chose.
Yes.
That's kind of unusual. Oh,
the Blue Skies. Yeah. Bing Crosby.
Blue skies.
Yeah.
Smiling at me. Yep. I don't know who was singing it. It was either Bing I don't know.
I think it was Bing. And it's funny. We heard a Bing Crosby song played in the Short Trek, The Trouble with Edward. So it's kind of, they must got a deal on Bing Crosby songs.
I was gonna say, Bing's getting the love.
Well, Blue Skies, of course, was. We saw Data sing that in Nemesis at Riker and Troy's wedding. Right. So, you know, there is a
tie-in
precedent for that tie-in.
What about you? What you got?
Well, I have to say that our instincts about trying to find a theme for this podcast. Now, I should preface to say we were looking for a theme that had a flute and we could not find one that was any good.
Yeah, flute's hard.
But I have to say,
where all the flautists are, but they're not making music for sale.
Yeah. Although although we never did find one that we liked, our instincts were correct on it. And I'll just say that I absolutely loved the theme and the opening credits of Picard. It's so well done. I wouldn't be surprised if the same company that did the opening credits to Discovery did the opening credits here, because I see some like kind of similarities in how it plays out. But it's just really well done. I thought that is very different from anything we've seen before in a Star Trek series, but also felt very appropriate and fitting, especially since, you know, we know kind of how the synthetics kind of fit into this story. You know, we see these molecules and, you know, turning into DNA and, you know, like things that would fit into that, crystals, but, you know, different crystals than the time crystals that we see in the, or dilithium crystals in Discovery. Anyway, I just loved the theme and the opening credits.
I agree. I really like the opening credits also. I thought it was great. And if you watch The Ready Room, the guy who composed the music talked about his idea for composition and how he wanted to start with the flute because of Inner Light and then go into something a little bit different. So like the flute was the past and then the cello is the present and then kind of back to the flute a little bit. So I was like, that is so genius.
You know, when I think of the last Short Trek and the music that Jeff Russo played at the end of that, like once we see, you know, the tragedy that's occurred and then the closing credits, I said that made me cry the 18 times that I've seen Short Trek. And this opening theme also makes me cry when I listen to it. It's just it's beautiful. I gotta say, it's genius and it's beautiful. And you are on a hot streak. Keep it up. I this is a little tiny thing, but it was something I noticed. I love the subtle touch of, you know, when Picard mentions about his left Data's left pupil dilating. When Mars was just about to explode, we see Picard look back at Data and both of his pupils have dilated. I just thought that was genius. It was just such a small thing, but once you see it, it's like, wow, that was really thoughtful, like just a nice little touch. The fight scenes were great in this. I think they probably learned a little bit from the work that they did with Michelle Yeoh, you know, on Discovery, because anyway, the fight scenes that we saw Dodge do both in the apartment and on the steps there, and you know, that long, you know, Data-like jump, you know, if she ever had any question, I think being able to jump like that, yeah, she's probably an android. Anyway, I thought that was really good. And just to convey what was said before, I think the Romulans are done really well, like the makeup. I noticed like the Romulan who ends up next to Picard during that fight, we get like a close-up of him from the back of his head, and we see Picard in the background, but the camera is focused on his ear, and we see like these little pores on the ear, and we also see a single ear hair. And I
thought, wait, who are you talking about?
It's the Romulan who ended up, like, you know, falling down the stairs and ends up, like, at Picard's feet. Okay, and there's a shot where we see from the back of the Romulan's head, and it's basically Picard's in the background, but in the foreground is the Romulan's ear, and it's basically we can see the pores on the Romulan's ear, like at the top, and we also see an ear hair, and it's just like, man, that does such brilliant makeup, and there's probably visual effects involved there, but I just thought that was such detail. Anyway,
not pay that close attention.
I know, it's like you're looking at Romulan ear hairs, Brian. What's up?
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, I have too many yeses, so I'm going to stop. But anyway, I just love this episode. I was so happy it turned out well.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on about yeses too, but I didn't really want to.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll come up.
All right. So now, believe it or not, there are some no's.
No!
Picard says, no, they're not.
Okay. Brian from Hawaii says, it's hard to come up with no's for this. I'm not too fond of how old and frail Picard seems in general. His voice is quite raspy and shaky most of the time now. Maybe his vigor will come back somewhat once he's on his mission. And I have to say, I have to agree with you here. After watching so much TNG lately, it's kind of hard to see how much older he looks. And I'm also hoping for the same thing, that he'll be invigorated.
Yeah, supposedly it's a little confusing because it's either he's either 92, as the producers actually said today on a podcast that I was listening to, or according to the dates, if this is 2399, he would be 94. So I don't know if he's 92 or 94, but basically it's a 79-year-old playing a 92 or a 94-year-old. So
yeah, but humans live longer than the standard 90 something years that they do around now ish. Mm-hmm. So
yes, we see it McCoy.
Kind of makes sense that he would be playing as a, you know, well, he's 80 now. Well, he will be this year.
Right.
I don't know when his birthday is, exactly what day it is. But anyway, he was 79 when this was filmed, so yeah, that makes sense.
I believe it's July 13th.
Okay, so he's still 79. Congratulations.
Am I right?
Not yet an octogenarian. I gotta tell you, when I watched Logan, it really shook me up for a little while, because they did such a good job of aging up both Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. I watched that and I thought, oh my gosh, they look so old. How can they be so old? They shouldn't be that old. And then I saw them both on the Graham Norton show, and I was like, oh, phew. Oh, I get concerned when people that I love look so much older. I'm like, no, you have to be alive longer. Anyway. All right. So, to continue with Brian's nose, he says, also, how is Mars still on fire after 10 years, especially considering how little oxygen in its atmosphere, even with terraforming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wondered that myself.
I mean, someone else touches on that a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. Okay, he says, the only other no for me was the scene where Picard had tea with Dash. I didn't like how most of his replies to her were single words, and the camera kept cutting back and forth on him to deliver such short lines. It didn't seem like good editing or writing for that part. And Aaron mentions this in his feedback as well.
Yeah, I have. That would be a shortcoming, I would say. With it, and I actually noted some other parts in a minute, which we'll get to.
I didn't think it was that bad. I was paying special attention when I watched it again to that scene, and I didn't really find it too off-putting or anything. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I understand the point, and I would say that was a weaker a slightly weaker point of the writing at that point.
Right.
James, the augmented sailor, says the loss of most of Data's neurons after download into B4. I was hoping we'd see some kind of explanation that they'd saved his memory. I mean, I guess his daughters are his memory, but being such a fanboy, they've made it somewhat final that Data, the man, is gone for good.
I know. This also made me very sad. I was like, no.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that.
All right. Rick from Cleveland says, Data had a daughter. Her name was Lol. She actually looked a bit like Dodge. If I saw Data doing a painting he titled Daughter 3 years after he had a daughter, I would think this is a painting of Lol. Writers, you missed the boat here. Just a line or two of dialogue closes this gap.
I would agree with that.
Yes, I would have to agree with that. I didn't really, it felt like a bit of retconning to me, and I was like, well, okay, I guess, whatever.
Yeah, like if he said my next daughter or something like that, or, you know,
yeah,
future but daughter.
I agree. If he's painting his daughter, then the daughter he's painting is Lol.
I would think so. I know that if he did paint a daughter, and, you know, like he may have done it later in my rewatch. So, well, you're ahead of me, right? You're
not yet. He hasn't done it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that painting, as far as I can remember from, I haven't seen all of season 7 yet, but as far as I can remember, that painting never shows up. I mean, obviously that girl hadn't even been born yet.
Yeah, exactly. I think she's 20. Like the actual actress.
Let's find out. IMDb will tell us. Hang on. I've got it up here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She was born in 1999.
She just had her 21st birthday.
So, yeah. She was not alive yet.
Oh, interesting. She was actually born in England.
London, UK.
Yeah. Did not know that.
Alrighty. Moving on.
Fred from the Netherlands says, not enough time to watch it twice before the podcast deadline of Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern.
Sorry, Fred.
Not enough time to create a proper audio feedback before the deadline. I have to see if I can take every Friday afternoon off from work. I already know that won't be possible for episodes 2, 3, and 5. This is Fred kind of rubbing it.
Yeah, he's digging it in. Sorry, Fred, we have to record on Friday night so we can get the episode out by Sunday.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I see, here's the thing. I know that Fred
wants that showcase.
Yeah, he wants that showcase. That's what it is. And also, I know that he listens to another Star Trek podcast that they literally record their episodes on Saturday morning, and they have their episodes out by Saturday afternoon. But what he doesn't tell you is that their episodes sound like crap. I will not allow that to happen on our end. So, you know, I take, like, listeners, as long as our podcasts are, what you don't realize is how much I take out.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. So
some of us are long-winded.
Both of us.
Or verbose.
Both of us are at times. Or we end up, you know, ooh, squirrel.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's really the problem. Like we are right now.
Yes.
Anyway, carry on.
Here it is, a sample, but otherwise you could say,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
No.
Shut up, Blaine. All right. Anyway.
He also says, Dodge hasn't introduced herself properly to this unknown old guy from her dreams and starts confessing all kinds of private stuff. And Picard just lets her blabber without really wanting to know who she is first. Yeah.
No, I have to disagree with you here. She's upset. He can tell she's upset. She's in shock. Her boyfriend just died in front of her, and she killed 3 people. So,
yeah.
Cut the girl a break. Stop being a misogynist, Fred.
Well, I have to, I'm going to give one of my no's here because it's a part of this. So Dash shows up at Chateau Picard and she tells him that she just killed a bunch of people. And Picard doesn't seem to be fazed by this. He doesn't even bat an eye. let me see if I can find you a place to rest for the night. It's like, yeah, how does he know that he can trust her? Other than, you know, we find out that number one seems to like her, and that's great. But it's just like he puts an awful lot of trust in this woman who just, you know, confessed that she just killed three people.
Oh, come on. She shows up. She's obviously upset. She's hurt. She says her boyfriend just got killed in front of her, and she basically killed the people who killed her boyfriend. To me, this is clearly a home invasion story.
Well, that's true, because it is a home invasion story.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He's like, and as he said, number one would have reacted differently if she were a danger to him. And I also think, as is clear based on his dream, that his subconscious mind is putting it together and not saying stranger danger. So,
yeah, I think you have a really good point there. Yeah, I think that may have tied into this. You know, for some reason, he's able to pick up on it, because like he does even say, you know, he's like, I think you might be right. And at first when I heard him say that, I was like, was he just like placating to her? But as I, like, he must have subconsciously known that he had seen that face before. He just didn't know where from, you know?
Right.
So,
and his subconscious put it together in the dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to shake my finger a little bit. You two. Come on now.
Yes, well.
Anyway, Fred's just grumpy because he didn't get to put some audio feedback in there. Sorry, Fred.
Yeah, and he'll probably put audio feedback in the other podcast that he listens to and says, I didn't get to do that. Anyway, we're just kidding you, Fred.
We can take the digs. It's okay.
It's okay. And believe me, we understand that it's tight for him, you know.
Yes, I get it. You're in the Netherlands.
We do get it. We get it.
I understand.
We get it. And we're not doing it because we want to torture you or anything. It's just, we just want to get the podcast, especially this podcast. This is an important one to get out as quickly as possible.
That's right.
So we don't want to wait. So,
you know, you love us best.
Yes. We did have one more, and I'll give it. It's just a little quick one. It's from LT from NC. He says, the only no I have now is that I have to wait a whole week to get more.
Agreed, LT.
LT, you speak truth. All right, what do you have for no's?
I was disappointed that Dodge was killed off so quickly. I was really surprised about it when it happened, and I kept hoping it wasn't true. And I'm still kind of holding out.
Yeah. I think I'm in a little bit of denial about it still. Like,
yeah.
I'm still thinking, you know, did she actually die?
She's going to show up.
Yeah. But
even though I'm sure she probably won't, I'm still like, no, she can't be dead.
And the funny thing is, you know, the actress has been, you know, paraded around as Dash. She's Dash. She's Dash. And it turns out that we're going to know her going forward as Soji.
I know. A little bait and switch there. I see what you did there, and I'm not pleased. Again, I'm shaking my finger.
Yeah. I had one more no, and that was that Picard gets knocked over by an explosion and he just goes home.
We have no idea how long he was out.
Well, that's the question, is like, did he go to a star, since he was around Starfleet, you think, you know, did he go to a Starfleet medical facility to get checked out before he wakes up on a couch in Chateau Picard, you know, literally maybe halfway across the world?
Maybe. I mean, he was in I mean, they said something about security, so we know that at least some people were there, found him out and about. But I mean, it was kind of an interesting segue, but I guess that made it all the more shocking that Dodge got killed like that. I was like, what? No, what?
All right. Well, as those of you that listen to us on the Star Trek Discovery podcast, you normally hear Tilly at this point saying, hold your horses. But instead, we have our good man, Picard, saying,
not good enough, damn it, not good enough.
And these are the things that we question and wonder what will become of it. So, all right, I'll do the first one. Brian from Hawaii says, the episode ended so abruptly. It surprised me that it would be finished so soon. I guess time really does fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and James, the augmented sailor, he says something similar in his. Not good enough, he says. Short first episode. I mean, it packed a punch, but lately things at least seem to be on the short side. Considering all the short treks that we just got.
Yeah, and the short treks, and the short treks, and the shorter short treks. Yeah, I agree. I agreed. I was kind of hoping for more. It ended, and I was like, what? No.
And historically, I'm the one who complains about things being too short. But I looked at it and said, 46 minutes and 7 seconds. I'm okay with this.
I guess.
Would I have liked it to be a longer episode? Hell yes. But can I complain with it being 46 minutes? No, I can't. And the episode was pretty tight, I thought. It could have used a little more exposition here and there, I guess. But and on the whole, I thought it was a decent length. So,
yeah.
And I think it sets things up nicely for the next one. So,
yeah. All right, James the Augmented Sailor had this in his Not Good Enough. They killed Dodge already? She was such a badass from what little we saw of her, hoping her sister takes up the mantle nicely. And I had to put that in my nose because I just was too know about it. And then he goes on to say about his, after he says that the episode was short, he says, I want more now! Binging has spoiled me and it's so hard to wait a week nowadays. And just a playful one for me, but not enough number one. He's my Jet Reno of this show. And according as I was watched The Ready Room, and if you haven't watched The Ready Room with Will Wheaton, they said he's not a very good actor.
Yeah.
So you might not see him in as many shots, or you might see him more shots as he gets better. And they actually decided to cut out some of his scenes because of this. So, I guess the dog was doing not what they wanted.
Sounds like it.
Oh, well. I'm sure he will get trained better or be better as the training goes anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah.
Oh, well. I would have liked to see more of him as well, but I just...
Maybe that's why the episode was so short.
I thought it was funny, though, that... It was not a very good actor. And I wonder, they didn't say specifically what things they wanted him to do that he didn't do. But my mind was just like, I couldn't help but think, okay, what did he do?
Yeah.
Who did he pee on?
Yeah, right. Or did he just like take a crap right in the middle of Oh,
yeah.
Poor number one.
We love you anyway, number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
I love pit bulls. I used to have a pit bull and would definitely have one again. We have Shorty right now, but I don't want to get too... Anyway, I could see us having another pit bull again at some point. Yeah. If we could have another pit bull right now, we would probably have one. But we have our two pet maximum here. So that's all we can have. Anyway. Rick from Cleveland is next. In the Not Good Enough, he says, Romulans spitting acid-like venom? It sure looked like that is what led to the burns on Dash's skin and the weapon exploding. I've watched it 3 times, and I'm still not quite sure what that was. But that's what it looked like. Yeah, I don't know. Like we were talking about before, like it seemed like kind of like a poison pill, like a cyanide pill, but something that could be spit.
Like some kind of capsule or something that he bit into and then spit at her or whatever.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking it was, but I don't know. I would love to see an explanation of that. And, you know, they didn't cover that on the Ready Room, but that would be a question that I could see them like ask. If it was a little bit longer format, like the After Trek was a little bit of a longer format. This was, how long was it? Maybe 25 minutes?
I think it was like 26 minutes. It was short.
Yeah. And if you don't know what the heck we're talking about, CBS is doing a like after show called The Ready Room. It had done it before. And this time it's now available like on YouTube, Facebook, I think Twitter, and it's also on CBS All Access. I'm pretty sure it's also available on Amazon Crave if you get it in Canada. But it's available, even if you don't have those things, it's available on YouTube, I know. So that's how I watched it yesterday. Next is Fred.
All right, Fred from the Netherlands says, in the opening scene when Picard is playing cards with Data, Sir Patrick is not as strong as he once was. Overacting? Especially when he says to Data, let's behave like civilized men. On the other hand, perhaps just as he once was, namely in season one of TNG. The same is true for the interview scene. Not the best acting by Sir Patrick.
Fred.
I know. Why so harsh?
I think Fred is just grumpy about the, the feedback deadline. I think it's tarnishing his overall pleasure of watching the show.
Yeah. I don't understand how he thinks that it's overacting or not the best. I don't know.
I mean, the part I had seen some people, like when you say not as strong, like, you know, I know a lot of people talked about the frailty of Picard, like specifically the one where he's like running with Daj there, and he kind of like, you know, I thought, uh-oh, his artificial heart is going
on. No kidding. Again.
Yes. Yes. Faulty. But I think that was... We'll talk more about that in a bit, but I don't know. I did not see any problems with his acting at all, Fred. So I have to agree to disagree with you there.
Yep.
LT from NC has the last bit of not good enoughs from our listeners. He says, my not good enough is the reason for the deduction. The discussion at the Daystrom Institute was just off. From the way I understand computer systems. So they couldn't use B4's brain or downloaded data information to make a new positronic net. But you can make a whole net out of one bit of the right data? I get where they were going. I understand why from a plot standpoint, but that was the one weak point that bugged me.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you there. I didn't really understand why they could make an entire new brain out of cloning a piece of the neural. I don't know. That was kind of...
See, my thought on this is that the neuron was kind of like the framework for which the positronic net could be created. So it's not so much that they were able to get that one cell, but it's that, you know, that one piece, if they could replicate it, they could
neuron.
If they could replicate the neurons, they could build basically the framework to create the positronic net. And then that would allow them to then load the information from Data and build a new positronic net. That's my thought. It's what they call in computer programming a scaffold. So you are able to build a scaffold based on the framework. And then from that, you're able to build it out and turn it into a whole positronic net. Anyway, that's your point is taken. And I thought of that, and that was my explanation for it. On the whole, I agree with you. It was a little bit weak. My other point of not good enough was the ninja Romulans with the motorcycle helmets. I wondered about this one too. If they are Tal Shiar as a guest for right now, how many guys do they have in the office to send after Dash? Didn't anyone notice the energy burst from the point-to-point transporters if no one showed up on the security camera? Or did they manage to doctor the tape or not show up on camera? Not a huge thing, but enough to make me wonder. Well, what I wonder about is if Starfleet is kind of in cahoots here. Mm. That's my take on it.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I have to wonder about that, but I'm just kind of okay. Well, we'll see where this goes. So, and maybe I'll look at this next week and I'll say, yep, that's kind of a weak point, but you know, we'll see. Mm. All right. Well, I have a few not good enoughs. There was an order of magnitude problem, I think, in this episode. Like they mentioned 900 million Romulans. To me, like 900 million Romulans can build an empire. That number seems low to me, considering the fact that like in 2020, 5 billion
people on Earth.
Well, even more than that. In 2020, we have two countries on this planet, India and China, that have more than 900 million people. So an entire empire with only 900 million seems low to me.
Yeah, they probably should have said 900 billion.
Yeah. Yeah, throw a B in there.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the 92,143 dead from the synth attack on Mars. I mean, that's obviously going to be lower, and I wouldn't expect that to be like, you know, 9 billion on Earth, like that it might be, or, you know, even 9 million. The 92,000 number does seem low as well. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but to me, it seems like they surely would have been able to rescue a whole bunch of people. Like, I mean, not everyone who was in the Twin Towers died. Some of them were rescued, for example. So,
yeah. And
with transporter technology, they would be able to zap people out of there much more quickly than having to actually, like, go in and get them.
Yeah, and
I don't know how many people actually were on or were at Planitia, Utopia Planitia, but I can see that number being, I mean, that's still a shocking number.
It sure is. Yeah. And I guess that number makes a little more sense. It's the 900 million that seems low to me, but you know, then you start thinking about it. It's like, the one thing that I was surprised about that I in literature, I don't think this was actually defined in the 2009 Star Trek movie where the supernova was, but the reporter identifies it as the Romulan sun. And I believe in the comic book that there was another comic book back in 2009 called Countdown. Not to be related to the Picard countdown, but strangely enough, Picard was in it. And by the way, Data was in it as well. And he was alive and he was the captain of the Enterprise E in it. So obviously they've thrown that out. That was kind of thought to be canon for the 2009 movie, but it seems like it's not quite canon now because Data's not alive. But anyway, it was called the Hobus supernova there, but we hear no reference to Hobus in this. They may have just decided to, you know, the thought is it's things that are on screen that are considered canon, and it's the other things like books and comic books and the stuff like that. Even if it's written in tandem with something that's on screen, it's not necessarily canon. So it's canon if it's later mentioned in on screen. And in the case of, you know, Data being alive and Hoba supernova, it was never defined on screen. So
I have to agree with that.
It seems that they've changed that. So it's worth saying, but I was surprised to hear her say that it was the Romulan sun. I'm like, oh, I guess Hobus is not involved, unless they later define Hobus being the Romulan sun. It's the same thing. Right. So we'll see. One thing I'm really surprised about, and it just made me scratch my head, on an otherwise brilliant opening credits, the one thing I was like, what? When they show Star Trek Picard, the title, they show Star Trek not in the classic font that we've been seeing in all the promotional materials, including my hat that I have on right now. And it's in our artwork. Star Trek's in the classic font, but they didn't use that for the title sequence. Instead, they used the Discovery Star Trek font. And I was like, why'd they do that? It's just weird. Because, you know, normally I wouldn't care, but the fact is all of the material that they've published, including stuff that was in the, like, Next Time On, had that classic Star Trek font and not this other font. So it's just weird. It's certainly not anything I would deduct from it, but I'd be like, hey, why did you do that?
Yeah. I mean, if you put out promotional material that has a different font, it's kind of weird, but
yeah,
whatever.
And the other thing that I wanted to bring up, and I brought this up in the roundtable, I brought this up in the last short trek, but you know, I made a prediction, or you know, a theory, that I think that the ones that are behind the synth attacks are Section 31. And I have to say, who would have the motive and the means to pull off something like this, reprogram the synths, and why they would do it? Well, they would probably do it, like, to me, knowing them, they would look at things like the Zach Dorn do, where they would say, acceptable tactical losses. And they would look at it to say, okay, if, you know, for, you know, 100,000 to die on Mars and completely stop something that we believe is in the long term security a bad idea for the Federation, we are going to do this. And that's going to be a rallying cry for the, you know, worlds of the Federation to support this, to say that it's not a good idea, that all this. And I have to say, I have no proof at this point, but we know that the writers seem to love Section 31, at least on Discovery they did. I have to think that Section 31 is involved with this. Now, here's what I'm going to say. Picard, he doesn't know, unless Worf or O'Brien has told him, he doesn't know anything about Section 31. So he wouldn't think of it. Although it would stand to reason, you know, he knows Worf, of course, and, you know, he knows O'Brien. You'd think that if they suspected it, they would have said something to Picard about it, and, you know, they would have investigated. And maybe this is what he found out. And maybe this is what, like, what he finds out, this is Section 31 that did this, and this is Section, you know, because he says it's no longer Starfleet. Maybe that's what he found out. It's like, Starfleet, Section 31, they did this. I can't support this anymore. And one thing that was mentioned in, it's either the podcast or the Ready Room. It was either one. Where, actually, I think it was in the Ready Room. That's right. There was a little featurette in the Ready Room where they brought this up, where Picard, you know, threatened to resign, and he thought that he'd, like, call them on their bluff, and then they'd say, okay, well, we'll do something, you know, and get them to step down. But instead, they took his resignation. And I wonder, like, we know about Rafi Musiker, who I think we're going to see next episode. She was his first officer on the Verity, according to the comic book. So we'll find this out next episode. Spoiler, sorry. Anyway, the Michelle Hurd character. I'm wondering if she also tried to resign and, you know, so she, maybe Picard convinced her to do this and thinking that they wouldn't let him resign and they did. And you know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't be surprised if this is the thing that we don't know, but I'm saying that that's what it is. And I was right about Vok. So we'll see. We'll see. And if I'm right, I'm right. I think it's a brilliant story to do. So anyway, that's my take.
It could be. I still think that maybe the synths were being used as a slave labor force. They brought that up in Measure of a Man, and maybe they just got fed up with that. I don't know.
And you know what? If that's what it is, that's also a great story.
Yeah.
So I think either way, this is to be set up. I think this is going to be a really good story.
Yeah. I don't understand why the attack of the rogue synths would cause them to say, well, forget it. We're not going to help the Romulans anymore. That doesn't really, I hope that they explain that, because that's kind of like a non sequitur. Like, that doesn't mean that.
I wonder.
Like, why does that mean that?
I wonder if the synths had become an important thing within the Federation, like they were used everywhere, and suddenly the Federation felt very vulnerable.
Maybe.
Since, and that, this is another reason why I wonder about Section 31, because you notice how no one knows how this happened. Well, it's like, really? No one knows? It just seems like it was all swept under the rug. And that also seems like a Section 31 thing to do. But regardless of it, it seems like there is a strange mystery there, which I look forward to finding out what the true story is there.
I also don't understand why a few rogue synths doing this would cause them to completely shut down all synthetic life form research, I guess. I don't know how else to say that.
I don't know either, except that it could have been a political thing. Like, and that's how a lot of things happen, you know, like we get this one thing and the people that are in power just kind of, you know, turn into a political issue. And then the next thing you know, something like this happens.
Yeah.
Because it is what we're seeing in this already are two examples, and that's with the synths and the Romulans, where we're seeing people treated like other, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Romulan, like, you know, it's kind of like, well, 900 million Romulan lives. And Picard says, no, lives.
900 million lives, yeah.
Yeah. And the synths, the same kind of thing. And, you know, with the synths, they just shut them down, you know, because obviously seems like these synths do not have...
They're expendable.
Yeah, and they don't seem to have the rights that, you know, Data was given. Had. Right?
Yeah.
That's all really interesting stuff. Really, really interesting stuff. I applaud them for this story. I think we're in for, like I said, we're in for the next 10 weeks of just great TV.
Yeah. My not good enough was kind of along the same lines as what we've sort of been talking about. I'm finding it really, it's really hard for me to think of Starfleet as no longer being the idealistic version of our future that it was set up to be. It's just a really tough notion for me to swallow. If it's a pendulum swing thing, like it was swinging the really super good way and now it's swinging back the other way, I don't know. But I wanted it to last forever as the gold standard and to be the gold standard. And if it's no longer that, then this Star Trek is going to be a really different Star Trek from what we had in the past. Like, we could count on Starfleet having a specific set of morals and codes that they would stand by no matter what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now it kind of seems like maybe that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, and I wonder if we're going to get back to that. The thing that I'm picking up on is that both the Federation and Starfleet, well, I can't say both, I'll say, because it's three things I'm going to point out. The Federation, Starfleet, and Picard did not deal with this issue in the proper way. Like, Picard's, I think, regret here is that he just decided to retreat and, you know, said, "The heck with you." And I think after 14 years, he has regretted that because he didn't fight for it as much as I think that he sees now that he probably should have and should have.
It was kind of like cutting off his nose to spite his face.
Yeah.
It didn't really hurt anybody but himself, I guess.
It seems like there was no negotiation there. And perhaps maybe the Federation couldn't have done everything that they were planning to do or that they promised to do, but they probably could have still done something.
Yeah.
And it seems like they've done nothing. So, you know, it seems like there was no compromise.
I mean, maybe it could have been a bit of hubris on the part of Jean-Luc. So,
yeah.
And yeah. That can be a bit of a sucker punch.
Yeah.
Finding out I'm not as important as I thought I was.
Maybe. Okay. So that's it for our not good enoughs. Let's move on to our feedback section. Open hailing frequencies. Okay. So our first is a voicemail from Jeff from North Carolina. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Star Trek fans. This is Jeff X-Force 11 leaving my feedback about the first episode of Star Trek Picard. I loved it. I think the best sci-fi is the one that tells a story about people, not about the technology, not about the future, but about people. And I think this is going to be a wonderful series that way. If you've got our good buddy Sir Patrick in there, you've got to know that it's going to be a character-driven piece. And the cast that surround him are doing a wonderful job fleshing this story out so far. It feels like we have known them even though we're being introduced to most of them. I'm loving the cinematography in this first episode. It was just beautiful the way they looked at France and at San Francisco and the different areas that we got to see. I love the visual changes between the different places. Overall, I loved it. I'm ready to see episode 2 and ready to see the story that they are going to tell us through Star Trek science fiction. All right, those are my thoughts. Jeff, X-Force 11, signing off for now.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, and good to hear from you. Of course, Jeff was on our former network, Golden Spiral Media. Well, does he still do a podcast over there? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Anyway, thank you so much, Jeff. He also mentioned he had a little bit of written feedback. He says, "I left my audio feedback, but for here, I will say I love it. I think one of the most bold things Trek has done is attempt to tell different kinds of stories with their series. They each look at different aspects of life. I'm all in to see what Picard holds for us. I watched Discovery after season 2 aired and actually loved all of it. For different reasons that I'm digging Picard, I really dig the Orville too. The best love letter to Trek without being Trek. I'm still hoping that Brian is right about his Janeway theory." Yes. Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, I hope. Because I keep looking for that actress to be identified, but I just don't find any information on who that person is or who she's playing. So that's why I'm thinking we're going to get to that scene. It's going to be Kate Mulgrew. We'll see.
That would be quite a fun shocker.
It would be. All right. Well, in any case, we have our next bit of feedback. It's also a voicemail from Steve from Oklahoma City.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie and everyone else listening to the Star Trek Picard cast. I can't wait to hear what you thought of this, Brian. I really did enjoy it. My no was that Jeri Ryan wasn't in this episode. And I only say that because from the trailers that we've seen, the teasers and everything that we've been told, she is billed to have a large, major role in this series or in this season, at least that's the way I interpreted what we've been told. And so we haven't seen her yet. So I was a little disappointed about that. I do love the plot. I love the idea of these synthetic androids being out there, these that have some part of Data in them. I can't wait to see where the series goes. How is Picard going to proceed? Obviously, he's got to seek out the twin. He's got to possibly find this Maddox person. Is he going to go talk to Daj's parents? What are we going to see going forward? But I am excited for it. I love the episode. Even though I'm not a TNG fan, as most people know, or some people know, and I'm not a huge Picard fan either, but I like this version of it. This what we've seen, the character development that we've had from Picard over from Starfleet to now. I loved the interview scene when she asked why he quit Starfleet, and he said because it wasn't Starfleet anymore. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad we got a little bit of the background, and I can't wait to hear some more of what happened with this whole supernova and this synthetic android uprising. All right. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Well, thank you again, Steve. And of course you get a showcase award. And I'll say to new listeners, Steve goes into more detail in our Series 1 Roundtable of Discovery about why he doesn't like the Next Generation. Hint. Mm-hmm. Hint. He had a crush on Denise Crosby. Anyway. So, he was traumatized as a youth. I think the talk about Jeri Ryan being very important in this show is definitely going to be the case, but I don't think we're going to actually see Seven of Nine until we end up out in space. And I think the first two or three episodes are going to be Picard kind of assembling his team to get to the point where he can go out into space again. So, you know, maybe...
Or if it really is Captain Janeway and she's saying something, or Admiral Janeway, and she's saying something like, we can't help you, but she like slips him a piece of paper that tells him where he can find Seven of Nine, you know, something like that. That would be kind of cool.
That would be,
because obviously Janeway would keep in touch with Seven of Nine.
Yes. That would be,
What?
If I ever heard one. All right. Well, anyway, thank you, Steve, and good to hear from you. Our final bit of voicemail is from Derek from Ireland. I don't know, has Derek ever, I think maybe he did send in voicemail once, but if he has, it's been a while. And if he hasn't, well, thank you for sending some in. Anyway, now Derek does a Star Trek Picard podcast of his own. It is called simply the Star Trek Picard podcast on TV Podcast Industries. So give them a listen as well. Anyway, here's his voicemail.
Hi, Brian and Ruthie. This is Derek O'Neill here from Ireland. I wanted to share my thoughts about episode 1 of Star Trek Picard. I'm sure you have loads and loads of thoughts of your own and loads of feedback for this episode, but I wanted to share some quick thoughts that came to me after watching the episode. Loved the opening with Picard talking to Data. One of the things about that line where he says, I don't want the game to end, but I'm all in, it really reminded me of Doctor Who when David Tennant finished up in the role and left his final line as, I don't want to go, where that was the end of his journey, but in this case, we have Picard starting his adventure, really, with this line saying he doesn't want it to end. He has things finished in this game to play. I was really lucky to get to see this at the European premiere, the European press event in London. Seeing this in a room full of other Star Trek fans, it really gave me kind of this great feedback. You know, it's the best place to see it because everybody in the room is really excited about it. But because it still had the act breaks in it, where it kind of went to black after some major moments, it was really great hearing people kind of gasp audibly at big moments in the episode, particularly obviously at the end with this character of Daj, with Issa Briones has been going around the world promoting the fact that she's playing this character of Daj, and then of course dies at the end of the episode, but we see her sister and we see her new character. But really interesting to that the audience was completely taken aback by that at the end, and then that major reveal of a Borg ship being reclaimed by the Romulans. I think that was just such a big reveal, and seeing that the Romulans potentially are rebuilding their empire to go on the attack, I think that's kind of an interesting end point for the episode. Finally, I loved Picard's room of keepsakes in the archives. It's really cool just kind of going through them and seeing what things that he's kept. You know, the model of the Stargazer and the model of the Enterprise E in there. That was really cool. The banner for Picard Day, which I'm sure you guys are going to be talking about on the episode as well. Really good fun for the Easter egg hunters among us to find what all those things are. And I know I missed loads of stuff in there. Really excited to see what's coming up in the rest of the season. I'm sure you guys are really looking forward to seeing the rest of it as well. Talk to you soon. Enjoy Star Trek Picard.
Yes, definitely. We will be enjoying Star Trek Picard. In fact, we already do. And
I'm super jealous that he got to go to the
premiere. I know. Derek, of course, you get a Showcase Award too. And new listeners, if you don't know what this is, if you send in a voicemail, you get a Showcase Award.
You are a winner.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So, Borg Cube, Romulans, what are they doing?
I don't know. I was wondering that too. I was like, what are they reclaiming?
Yeah. So, that would be the big question. Are they trying to rebuild their empire there, or are they doing something else?
I don't know either. I'm sure we'll find out. We'll see that however many days since an assimilation.
Oh, yeah. Something.
Because, and I mean, it does, her being twins does clear up a lot of stuff. Like, why is she there? But then she was here. So, yeah, it's like, oh.
I mean, is it possible that Maddox, assuming, you know, that it is Maddox, that he, or, you know, maybe the Romulans or something, are using Borg technology to make these synthetics like Daj?
Maybe.
I don't know yet, but I am intrigued. That is for sure. All right.
Brian from Hawaii says, did you notice the credits said based on Star Trek The Next Generation, just like we saw in Children of Mars? I wonder why. Also, I appreciated how sparse and short the commercials were throughout the episode. The CBS All Access viewing experience seems much better now compared to last year. As far as why it's based on Star Trek The Next Generation, I would say that's because the character Jean-Luc Picard came from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, I think that's why. And it may be under a different license or trademark or whatever, however they do it, but that may be why. But at the same time, it doesn't matter. It's it's still Gene Roddenberry and Roddenberry, whatever they call it, entertainment or whatever it is. So it's all good. But yeah, it's also Jean-Luc, and obviously there's not much there, I think, from the original series. I think we saw a couple little things, and of course the Zahian, right? Nothing specific to TOS.
Okay. He also goes on to say, P.S. in Efferman Dot, both my son and I noticed the incorrect A on the refit Enterprise right away on our first viewing. No freeze framing at all. It really took us out of the experience. That was a big goof that I wish they would correct in what was otherwise a really fun and creative short trek. By the way, even though Children of Mars was the best one, the one I've watched the most and enjoy the most, is The Trouble with Edward. I want to thank your podcast for pointing out the post-credit scene. I had seen the episode twice already before I listened to the podcast and didn't know about the funny commercial at the end until you pointed it out.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Always, always watch to the end.
Even though CBS All Access might try and make you watch something else that you have absolutely no interest in watching, click back to the frame.
It keeps on.
So irritating.
Oh, and the thing is, too, is what keeps happening to me is it keeps on sending me to tell me a story.
Me too.
And it's like why do I want to watch
any interest.
That?
I don't have any interest in that.
Yeah. I want to say, tell me another story.
I want to say, tell me another Star Trek Picard.
Well, of course. But I mean, you'd think that they would at least, you know, redirect you to Next Gen or Discovery.
Something related.
Or Short Treks or something. But nope.
No, they're just trying. They've got an agenda they're trying to push.
Yeah.
And I don't appreciate it.
Please expand your palette.
Nope. No, thank you.
No, we want the Star Trek channel. That's what we want.
So. I want what I want, and I don't want something else. I especially don't want it since they're trying to shove it down my throat. Every single time I watch anything on the CBS All Access, if it's not like more than one of that series, like more than one episode of that series, then it redirects me to that episode instead of something else that it knows I'm watching. Like it says, these are your shows. I'm like, why don't you take me to my next episode of one of my shows instead of
good
anyway?
Point.
That's ridiculous.
I don't even
move on.
Like, and it tells me that Tell Me a Story is one of my shows. Well, it's one of my shows because you took me there.
Yeah, because you keep trying to make me watch it.
Mm. Yeah. Like I said, tell me another story. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Aaron from Akron is next. And he says, I have questions. Is Dr. Maddox illegally making androids? Metal over skin like the Terminator?
And I say, did you mean skin over metal?
Yeah, that I think that's what he meant. But yeah, so let's take that question for a minute. Is he illegally making androids?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe he is. Maybe he's, like, I don't know.
Well, let's break this down. If it was 14 years ago that the attack on Mars happened, Dodge is clearly older than 14.
Yeah, and, you know, okay, so there's so many questions there. Like, what is she doing on this Romulan Borg cube? and who put her there? And, you know,
Soji.
Yeah, yeah, right. Soji, the twin. And I guess, you know, when we talk about Issa Briones going forward, we're going to have to refer to her as Soji, not Daj.
Yeah.
Bait and switch, like we said.
Yeah.
But
in this episode, we still have both. So
yeah.
They're both clearly older than 14. So clearly they were both created prior to the ban.
Well, that's assuming that she grew up at the same age, you know, the same age level as a human would.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah. But I guess what she's doing on there, and I'm only judging this based on the, like, here's what you're going to see on this season of Picard that showed at the end of the episode. We saw some, like, Borgified people, which I assume it made it sound like she's a counselor. So I'm guessing she is trying to, you know, deal with these post-assimilated people, you know, that were Borg, that, you know, are having trouble adapting.
The people who have been liberated from the collective.
Exactly. And like I say, I'm basing that based on one character that we see that has a lot of Borg, and she's, like, you know, screaming about, you know, what she is or whatever. So I don't know if the Romulans put her there or if the Federation put her there or if Maddox put her there, or I don't know. I don't know if her technology is possible because of something they collected from the Borg. There's so many questions that I can't, there's just not enough information. I don't really understand this technology either, like this fractal neuronic cloning. I don't understand how it works, and I'm hoping we're going to get more explanation as to how it works, but okay. So let's just keep going. Continuing, next question he has is, if Mars is still burning, what sort of weapons were used to attack the planet? Where is Geordi? And
unknown at this time.
Yes. I mean, we know that Geordi was at Utopia Planitia based on the comic book. And if, you know, so it's possible he died, but that is still to be seen. But yeah, like, what sort of weapons would keep Mars burning for 15 years, you know, or 14 years, whatever.
I mean, Mars was already a really, like,
messed up place.
Sure, but I was going to say it's already it's already known as the Red Planet, so.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And we don't know if it's fully terraformed or what, but I don't know. It is weird to speculate, like, what would keep them going for 14 years. Next question, and I can already say I don't know. Who is Dash's mother?
Yeah, are you talking about the mother that we saw that she called, or something else?
Yeah, I don't know.
If it's that person, still.
Yeah.
Don't know yet.
The weird glitches that we saw in that call makes me think that it's a computer program. So, but the question is whether it's a computer program that is in Dash that's trying to, you know, simulate a what's essentially a phone call, or if it's some external program that she's communicating with, like, you know, basically calling the central office. I don't know, but I would assume that she isn't real. That's the assumption that I'm going with, is that the actual character is just a simulation. But we'll see. How many Romulans ended up refugees? I don't know.
Unknown at this time.
Did the Dominion War destroy their ability to evacuate their citizens?
Maybe.
I would think that it would have affected things. I think it affected all of the civilizations that were affected by the Dominion War. And of course, the Romulans were famously brought in with Sisko, but there were losses all around. So, you know, I'm sure that did certainly reduce the fleet, but that was also, that was around 10 years later that this happened. I'd have to look to see the actual time frame there, but it's something like 8 or 9 or 10 years later that this attack on Mars happens. So the fleet would probably not be completely built up, but they would have had some time to recover from it. Anyway, that's it for Aaron. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I guess I would also add, I'm not sure that anyone would be able to completely evacuate their entire planet in a timely fashion without help. So,
good point.
I mean, yeah, I'm not sure that anyone has that in their back channel, their back catalog. Oh, just in case we need to evacuate all the citizens of the planet Earth, which, you know, is more than 900 million, FYI. Anyway,
yes.
James the Augmented Sailor says, Remembrance unpacks so much in this introduction and does it so well, immediately tying itself into, dare I say, canon, and giving a quick and hard-hitting prologue on where Jean-Luc is in his life. I love that it raises questions and creates a mystery to unfold throughout the season. That's just good storytelling and will keep the audience captivated, as the answers are bound to come throughout the season. I'm feeling all the feels right now, and I'll probably have more feedback to come as I rewatch tonight. I'm so excited for this show, and from this and what I assume will be coming from it, I have a feeling this show is going to knock DS9 out of the top spot as my favorite Trek. Then he goes on to say, a couple of thoughts after a couple of rewatches. I'm sure I'm stating the obvious that Soji and Daj's father, that Soji mentions, will turn out to be Commander Maddox. One thing I hope they address, though, is how it seems Soji knows about Dodge, but it didn't seem that Dodge knew about Soji.
Yeah.
I think that's an excellent observation, and I am also wondering why this is so.
Yeah, it does seem that way. I'm wondering if this whole thing with Dodge is an experiment, but we don't know.
What do you mean?
That she is a prototype, you know, much like Data was. So, you know, they sent one to do one thing, and they sent, you know, one. So one character is aware of her existence and, or sorry, aware of what she is, maybe, and the other is not. Or at least one is aware of the sister and one is not. I don't know, but we'll see. Then again, Dodge maybe knew about the sister and never said anything. I don't know.
Me neither.
All right. Todd from Ohio says, so the painting is called Daughter. I think it's a little too on the nose to be Picard's daughter. I wonder if sometime before Data was killed in Nemesis, if he ever tried again creating an offspring like Lal. Could Dodge be Data's daughter? And it seems that way, although perhaps not directly. She's the equivalent of the test tube baby. I don't know.
Or, I mean, we presume that she is cloned from one of his positronic neurons or whatever.
Right.
So.
Right. Yep.
So, yeah, I think Dodge is Data's daughter. I wonder how Dr. Maddox got that image, though, if he had seen that painting or something, because he was in contact with Data after The Measure of a Man. In fact, there's an entire episode where Data narrates his, basically it's him narrating, it's Data's day, and he's narrating a letter to Dr. Maddox.
Yes.
So it's possible that he could have seen that painting. We don't know every little thing that happened in the characters' lives, so.
And assuming that he had a copy of Data's memories, we don't know what that might have looked like, but maybe he was able to go through it like, you know, a catalog of things, you know, like Irium had on Discovery, where she had all these files and she could, you know,
maybe
discard them. But anyway, he could see what Data saw. I don't know. These are things that we have no way of knowing. But I would think that he would have seen Dodge's image, or, you know, the painting's image, through some memory file. And I'm thinking, like, it's kind of like the raw files versus the operating system. So I think that's kind of what's going on, is essentially they had to build a new operating system, but they had the files. There's, as I said, with this fractal neuronic I keep wanting to call it clothing. I don't know why. Cloning. We don't really understand how it works. So, all right, next.
All right, Alex from New Jersey says, wow, definitely worth getting CBS All Access. Love the episode. There is a lot to take in. As much as I like the Star Trek world, I have not been invested as much as of late. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your take, as well as the listeners, and seeing what Easter eggs and such you find.
Yeah, and it's probably worth saying that I'm assuming that anyone that's listening has their subscription, the CBS All Access, already, or doesn't need it because they're, you know, in a different country. But if you're in the U.S. and you don't have CBS All Access yet, go to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS, and that will direct you to the sign up page, and we'll get a small thank you from CBS to, you know, so it helps cover our costs and whatnot. And I know that Alex actually used this link. And if you put in, when you sign up, if you put in the code January, and I assume this will work through the month of January, but if you put in the code January at the end of the process, it will convert your 1 week free trial to a 1 month free trial. So I wanted to mention that, because you know, we have the little thing we insert at the beginning, but just in case you skip through that and you need CBS All Access, you can help us out and help yourself out by signing up for that extra 3 weeks. So, okay. Steve from Texas is next. He says, great episode, but my initial theory of her being Hugh's daughter was wrong, and really glad it is, as I like how it turned out even better. The only issue was the scenes after the episode. The music was so loud, it was difficult to hear what was being said at times.
And which scenes are you talking about? I'm not sure if you mean the coming on this season of Picard scenes or...
I'm thinking that's what he means.
Okay. So I was like, I don't really remember that much dialogue in those scenes, but maybe that's because the music was so loud. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what he meant. I'd have to go back and see, but I think that's what he meant.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm glad you are enjoying it so far. Next, we have Rick from Cleveland. One very quick initial reaction. Discovery is canon. We have Zahians on Picard. Wahaha.
Yes.
I added that. But yeah, this episode had some of the best elements of Star Trek altogether. The sci-fi action with Dodge, but also the very compelling drama social commentary provided by Picard himself. Picard's sacrifice of his career when Starfleet no longer shared his principles that we must strive to be our better selves. Setting aside differences to save not Romulan lives, but lives, period. Themes of morality and simple right and wrong. This was the Star Trek I grew up with. It's what I loved in many episodes of the original series, so much of The Next Generation. It's what I loved about Anson Mount's Pike. And it is, and since Encounter at Farpoint, has been Jean-Luc Picard. As much as I enjoyed Discovery, loved what they did in Season 2, Picard is next level stuff, and Picard hasn't even left the planet yet. A prediction. We do see Bruce Maddox at some point this season, but he is now a hermit, much like Noonien Soong was when we saw him on TNG, working on synthetic life forms out of the view of anyone who can stop him.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, just thinking about the Romulans that tried to take Dodge, they said, like, you know, where are the rest of you or something like that, and so I guess they're not working with her. I don't know, there's so many questions that I have with that. Like, I kind of sympathize with Aaron and the things that he said. I really don't know, but yeah, I could see Bruce Maddox being like a hermit like Noonien Soong was. We will see.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or Section 31 co-opted him.
Yeah, who knows?
Uh-uh. LT from NC is next. And he says, greetings from Uncle Sarek's RV, parked out on the forge, home to all the previously unnamed kinfolk. I had to purposefully avoid social media in case someone decided to spoiler me. This one may be a little light, only because I'm still trying to process everything. I want to say this from the get-go. If only Discovery Season 1 had come out swinging like this. Amen. I have to agree. Because those first couple of episodes were a tough watch. On a side note, my wife watched it with me. And aside from some expositional filler I had to provide, liked it quite a bit. Well, that's encouraging. And
my stepmom and I watched it. She was like, hey, are you going to watch that show tonight? I was like, yeah. And she was like, how do you watch that? And I was like, well. So I went over to her house and we watched it together. She liked it, I think. Yeah. So
did your dad watch it?
No, he's being a poopy head.
Oh,
he just expects me to tell him everything and I refused. I mean, I told him a little bit of stuff because he's very persistent and pestery. And he's like, well, you know, he doesn't have CBS All Access and doesn't really have internet at his place. And he doesn't really, anyway, it's complicated. Okay, let's just move on.
All right.
Anyway.
It was also good to see how bits of the Countdown comic were used in the episode. It wasn't a requirement, but it did fill in a few of the gaps rather neatly. Yes, and you know, once the third and final comic, James, LT, and I are going to do a Patreon on it. So we'll probably have that done next time we record. So, yeah, but I agree with that because we see how Jaban and Laris kind of come to meet Picard. And then we also see certain parts of the story here. But, of course, then we also see the tie in the Children of Mars in here. So, all in all, though, I don't think that you needed to see any of those things to understand what was going on. So it's just, you know, nice to have. We did get part of the answer to what's up with the Borg cube, and now we get to see what the rest of the answer will be in subsequent episodes. It was a solid first episode, and I'm excited to see where we go from here.
Me too, LT. Me too. Moving on, Cutter from Tennessee says, really enjoyed the premiere. Loved how they wasted no time filling in the gap, giving a good overview of all the drama of the past two decades. I remember watching the premiere of TNG while in advanced individual training, his job specialty for the Army back in 87. This brought back a lot of the feels, but with way more production value. I agree.
Oh, yeah.
I like how the dawn of modern Star Trek these past few years has really upped the game on story and character development. Excited to see where we go with past characters, the Borg, the Romulans, and more. It's obvious that Picard was right, and Starfleet's isolationist turn has backfired. That they moved away from the progress and groundwork that Picard and Spock before/with him seems to have been the wrong move. Look forward to seeing where this takes us and can't wait to meet all the new characters they'll be introducing. Mr. Mercedes, aka Harry Treadaway, is a good choice for Big Bad. He's a good actor with great chops on the creepy side already. Engage. Yeah, I agree. I think one thing that I noticed very, very frequently that I'm glad has changed with my rewatch of The Next Generation is that so many storylines were just dropped completely and never went back to. Like, a couple of times, they picked up a thread from a previous episode and went with it again. But most of the time, it was, oh, this happened and it had this huge impact. And then it was never thought of again. And
yeah,
that's the whole, the difference between serialized storytelling and
episodic.
Yeah, episodic storytelling. So I suppose you could say they both have their value, but I do enjoy a through line, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, I do too. And so far, I think it's really turning out to be more than I had hoped, which is even great. Because I expected a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess back then it was not really conducive for them to have a through line because you couldn't necessarily see every single episode. And if you missed one, then you might get confused and just quit watching altogether, which is what they did not want. But nowadays, I mean, the way streaming is so readily available and episodes are more available than they were, less of a problem, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. All right. Ken from Chicago is next. He sent this on Twitter. Hashtag Star Trek Picard surpassed the hype. It was hashtag Star Trek that built on the past while advancing to the future. If you've seen the pilot, then you know. If you haven't, then I envy your oncoming treat. Applause, 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 applause emoji. I think that's what that is. It's good to be hashtag Trek. Thumbs up and Spock hand.
Agreed, Ken. All right. Daniel from the UK says, it's a great opener to what looks like it'll be a calmer, reflective character piece and murder mystery / suspense thriller worthy of even the great Detective Dixon. The Men in Black skullduggery, the young, beautiful twin, the old curmudgeon with a pass. All it needed was the voiceover narration and to be in black and white.
I think you meant to say Dixon Hill.
Dixon Hill?
Yeah.
Dixon Hill?
I think you just said Dixon. But okay. Yeah.
Worthy of the even the great Detective Dixon Hill. Okay. And then he adds a Humphrey Bogart narrating intro.
It was, I was tired from the, I can't do it.
I was going to say, don't try. I was tired from the interview answering those same damned questions like a jukebox stuck on the same record when she walked into the vineyard. I settled down with the fine wine I'd been sipping for what felt like a week to see her as she told her story. She was young, like a new day, but as frightened as a squirrel in the park.
And of course, I have to say, because, you know, that kind of fits that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that little narration thing that he wrote. So yes. I had to include it. I thought that was so much fun.
Yeah, and it reminds me of something that I think Data did on one early episode. It was a hard rain, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Mark from New York, who is, of course, my co-host on The Walking Dead Talk Through, is next. And he says, the visuals were amazing within this new show. This is the new Trek we have been waiting for. Seeing Brent Spiner back as Data had me grinning from ear to ear. I'm so glad that they created this show. Daj is an amazing character, a catalyst for a reason for Picard to have a purpose and reason to make an effort to do something that takes us on an adventure. Plus, bring us a show full of mystery, drama, and fun along the way. I can't wait for next week's episode. Me too.
All right. Kyle has a little something that he found on Twitter. So if you want to see it, you should go onto our Facebook page because I'm not really sure how to describe that picture, but it's a picture.
Yes.
He says, Kyle from Chicago says, found this on Twitter as unless I was watching this on my computer so I could freeze it, I wouldn't have seen it. Some interesting callbacks in the Boston skyline. My favorite is an ad for Cassidy Yates Freight Transport Company. And then he has a little emoji, a little smiley emoji with hearts on it. And it's something you can find trekcore.com on Twitter, I think. So, but yeah, there were a few interesting things on there. There was something from the Ferengi Alliance. Federation News Network, the London Kings.
Yeah, which I was surprised to see because I thought baseball had stopped in the, like, about 20 years from now, I think.
Yeah, and of course, Cassidy Yates Freight Company, Freight Shipping.
And I brought that up, and Kyle said, well, yeah, but didn't they revive baseball in one of the colonies? And, you know, maybe they did, so maybe by this time, you know, they've started up the league again. Who knows? But, yeah, maybe the London Kings were in town playing the Red Sox.
Yeah. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, that was pretty cool.
I still can't even see the Cassidy Yates thing. I looked at it on screen.
Way in the background or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Didn't zoom in that closely.
Yeah, in looking at it, I really had trouble seeing that one. But if it's true, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I definitely did see the Ferengi sign, though.
Yeah, I saw the Ferengi sign, and then I think in that, oh my goodness, there. Yeah. Well, anyway, in the picture, if you find that whatever you call it on Twitter, that post tweet. That's what it is. If you find that tweet on Twitter, then you can see pictures that they have pointed to. And yeah.
Yeah. There's a picture of Buck Bokai with the Kings logo on.
Yeah. And then I think the Cassidy Yates thing is this other squarish thing at the very top here that has lights on it. See what I'm talking about?
In the
picture that you put on there.
Sort of like middle left.
Yeah,
that's what I believe it is, but
I think that's the Cassidy Yates thing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this would benefit from this show being on in a 4K environment, which I don't think it's 4K on Amazon Prime, but
No, it's not. It's the one that's right next to the King's thing.
Oh,
you can't even see in the picture. If you look at the picture, hang on a second.
The Cassidy Yates is down. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I see that now. Yeah. Very cool.
Yep. Anyway. So, yeah. Cool find, Kyle. Appreciate you.
Yeah. And I totally missed that. Totally missed that. So, thank you for pointing that out to us. And did I say that he is our co-host on Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through? So, and of course, he does a lot of work for the network behind the scenes. And I know he is working on a new podcast for us, so which we'll announce soon. Also, we've got one final bit of feedback from Kim from San Diego. She says, I know I missed the feedback cutoff. And I'll say, surprise. But I really enjoyed the episode. I am surprised how much. I'm doing the thing I never do, which is rewatching today to see what I missed. Oh, what? You're only a one-time watcher? Is that... you never go back to watch anything? I guess I do that for you.
Yeah. I don't always rewatch, so...
All right. Other notes. What do you have?
I'm wondering if Romulans were allowed to become Federation citizens if they relocated to a Federation world, or are they viewed as less because the effort to evacuate them was abandoned by Starfleet and thus the Federation?
Yeah, it's almost like I wonder if they're, you know, considered illegal immigrants or something like that. It's worth wondering. There are a lot of questions, which I think will eventually become answered as we go as to their plight. But all right. So the timeline, I think that I just described based on what we know. I had speculated that the incident on Mars happened April 3rd, 2385. And I'm still kind of sticking by that. And I mentioned this on the episode about Children of Mars, is that April 5th, 2063 was the date of first contact. And they mentioned first contact day. However, in 2385, April 5th is on a Sunday. So I'm thinking that it was either Thursday, April 2nd or Friday, April 3rd, because we see the parents talking to the kids and that. And
it could have been the 6th, because generally speaking, if a holiday falls on a Sunday, it's celebrated on Monday. If it falls on a Saturday, it's celebrated on Friday.
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess. So observe day, it could be. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's possible.
But if it was on the observed day, wouldn't that be a holiday from school?
Exactly. Exactly. That's so why
It could have even been the 7th.
The 7th. Well, I don't think so, because
they weren't in school on Sunday the 5th or Monday the 6th.
Yeah, but I think based on the way, like, Lil, was it
before?
I think it was before. I think it was before, based on the discussion that the one girl has with her father.
Okay.
So
then being on the 2nd or 3rd makes more sense, because
I think so.
They probably would not have been in school for the observed day.
Yeah.
Which probably would have been the 6th.
Yeah. It has been said that Picard retired 14 years ago, given that Picard retired in 2385. So, assuming it's 2399. And There is some confusion about his age. He's either, because I've seen based on the, and we actually see it shown when Picard goes into that archive. It clearly said that his, I think, birth date was something like April 2305. So that would indicate that he's 94, but the way that I heard Alex Kurtzman talking about it on a podcast, he said that, and I heard Patrick Stewart say the same thing, that he was 92. So he's either 92 or 94, which I don't know what that means, but maybe
he's in his 90s.
Maybe they retconned him 2 years. What, either way.
Or maybe they can't math. I don't know.
They can't math. I won't call it headcanon at this point because I don't think that there's enough to call it headcanon, but I'm just like thinking that once he retired, he still tried to save as many Romulans as he could, but as a civilian. And
I don't think that's headcanon at all. I think that was alluded to. So
yeah.
I think that's a pretty fair conclusion to draw.
I think so. Yeah.
Otherwise, why would Laris have said something like, "We remember"?
Yeah. And I think that that would just, if he did all of that as a civilian, I think that would revere him even more in their eyes, you know? Because obviously, one man trying to save, you know, a lot of people. Here's one that's about to blow your mind. So Daj thinks she's from Seattle. You know who else thinks he's from Seattle? Ash Tyler. Coincidence? I think not.
Listeners, I'm rolling my eyes.
You got another note?
Yeah. So, since this ban on synths, what would happen? What do you think would happen if any other synths turned up? Because, after all, Data's mother was also an android, even though she didn't know it, and she was programmed to live a really long life. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't really. This whole ban on synths thing just doesn't really make any sense to me. It seems very, very counter to everything that Starfleet is. It seems like a very reactionary action instead of something more thoughtful, which is what I thought Star Trek and the Federation, or I should say Starfleet and the Federation, were. It's a very quick to judgment kind of a thing,
yeah.
Which again is contrary to everything that I thought that the Federation stood for. I mean, at this point in time, we don't really know how many of the synths were sentient, but nevertheless, if they destroyed all of them and halted all work on this project, that is sort of killing off an entire race. That's kind of genocide.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really seem like something, and I can see why not only the decision to stop helping the Romulans, which doesn't really seem like a logical step from, oh, the synths attack, let's just quit helping the Romulans. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I tend to think that it was kind of like they stopped because probably the synths destroyed. Didn't have their slave
labor force anymore?
That's the fact that they probably destroyed, you know, whatever that was getting built, and there was, you know, the amount of resources that would be required to, you know, start up a whole new shipbuilding program would take too much effort, or at least that's what they decided.
Maybe, but again, I still think that that's kind of, that's not really, doesn't really hold with the values that I know of Starfleet being, and it just kind of, or the Federation, or what have you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of one and the same. But it just doesn't really make sense to me. And I want that to be explored more. But I do want to know what happens if other synths turn up. Like, are they going to immediately be targeted for destruction?
Yeah.
Which, again, that's not really fair. That's like deciding that because, you know, one person has done this bad thing that every other person like him is bad. For example, if one person who happens to be Muslim decides to become a suicide bomber and blow something up, that means that every other Muslim is a suicide bomber. That doesn't really equate.
Yeah.
So,
you know what else it reminds me of is breed-specific legislation. And I'm wondering if maybe this was something Patrick Stewart saw and wanted Star Trek to examine. You know, mm-hmm. of course, you know, he's a incredible advocate for pit bulls, and we see right. a pit bull here. And, you know, pit bulls have been maligned in many places where, like, even in the UK, you can't own a pit bull and, you know, they'll come and
right.
put the dog down. And
for no reason,
yeah.
even if the dog doesn't show aggressive tendencies or anything. I mean, most breeds of animals can be trained to be aggressive,
right.
but for some reason, pit bulls have this stigma of being aggressive animals, which yeah. isn't true.
Well, they're a powerful breed, and also they like to please their owner. They really want to do whatever the owner wants them to do. So if the owner wants them to fight, they're going to fight. Like,
so in other words, if the people are bad, then the dog is.
Exactly. And
which is, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say Rottweilers are also very powerful dogs and they aren't universally feared.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some people do, but I mean, they're huge dogs. They can knock you over.
Yeah. Anyway, like I owned a pit bull. I know that at some point we're going to have another pit bull. And they are wonderful dogs. They are loyal and great family dogs and are really, they're beautiful dogs.
Right. So you think that maybe Patrick Stewart saw that type of discrimination and thought that would be a,
yeah,
something that he would be, that yeah. would draw him to it.
Cause there definitely does seem to be some parallels there. So I'm thinking that they probably will. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, we see a scene where they, you know, just like massively put down a legion of synths, and
right.
it's just it is very strange. It's also like really strange how the normal thing that you would expect Starfleet to do is do a whole investigation. You know, why did these synths do this? And instead,
right.
it just seems like the solution was, well, we're just going to shut them off and
ban all practical yeah. research.
And any investigation to determine the real reason why they did what they did is never done, you know, or is basically swept under the rug. And that's, again, another reason why I think Section 31 may be involved in this whole thing, because
maybe
these are things that Section 31 would do.
Yeah. Also, it's very reminiscent of the interaction with the Borg when
yes.
they come across the Borg, the liberated Borg colony in, oh, I can't remember the name of the episode, the end of season 6. The Admiral basically orders him to destroy any Borg drones that he finds in the future, instead of basically coddling them and giving them a name. That's kind of how she puts it. And, you know, of course, Captain Picard, his experience was at first the same as hers, but then he realized once he started talking to Hugh that this is a person, and he's not comfortable with just killing people indiscriminately, especially if they're helpless in the manner that Hugh was. And, you know, I guess battle and war is one thing, but if you find a single Borg by himself, he's not going to just indiscriminately kill it.
Yeah.
So same type of thing, I think. And I think that, in addition to the Romulan fleet thing, was, I think we'll find more about it. And I think that it was not only the Romulan thing, but the synth thing that caused him to retire.
Yeah. I probably won't get this pronounced correctly, but Orchid to say
Orchidacea?
Orchidacea. Why can't I pronounce that?
I don't know.
Orchidacea Dodge Oncidium. Yellow and pink. That is, of course, yellow for data, pink for human, I think.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
And in the short treks, I started doing this nitpicking Brian. And I said we would not be doing that at a regular thing. But I just want to say, I've heard some people nitpick what we see in the dreams. It's a dream. It's not a canon violation. If you think about it, you have different eras represented in the cold open, for example. You have the Enterprise D, you know, we know from the seven seasons of Next Gen and Generations. And I'm thinking that probably represents the happiest times together with Data. Then, of course, you get Data, who is not even wearing a uniform from that period. He's wearing the uniform from First Contact, right. Insurrection, and Nemesis. So this probably signifies Nemesis for, like, how he looked at the time he died. So,
right.
You know, we see Mars from the Children of Mars. So the day, you know, that the synths performed that unspeakable act. You know, so that also ties into Data, I think, because it was the synths that did that. Picard looks to be like he is presently. So, you know, obviously that doesn't fit on the Enterprise D. And they're playing poker in 10 forward, which a nitpicker would say, oh, they never played in 10 forward. They always went to an officer's quarters. Again, not a canon violation. It's a dream, people. It's a dream.
Have people actually...
Yes.
Voiced those things?
I heard Are this you serious? On a, I heard this on a podcast. On a podcast, wow. By a host that, and I don't mean to call him out, but I'm going to call him out. Matt Mira, former host of After Trek, you should know better.
Yeah, you're wrong. Sorry. That's a dream. You should understand the difference between a dream reality and reality. Also, he had 5 queens. I mean, come on now. Don't be dumb.
Oh, so... That's another thing. 5 queens? Could that mean Q is going to be involved?
Maybe, but I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
We know we're going to get Guinan.
Yeah, we do.
I'm excited about that.
Yes.
I can't remember who said it, but someone said a couple of different emotions. Boo! No Guinan in season 1. Yay! Guinan in season 2. I yep. feel the exact same way. Who said that? I have to look.
Might have been James.
I think it was James.
Yeah.
I gotta find that post.
Yeah.
Boop-a-doo. Here I go.
Do you have anything else you want to bring up?
I do. If I can find that thing. Here we go. Oh, it was Daniel. Daniel from the UK.
Oh.
At first, okay. Boo! No Guinan in season 1. Yes! Guinan in season 2. I'm right there with you, Daniel. I love Guinan. I love his relationship with Guinan.
It's very special. I would love, and you know, it seems pretty open-ended as far as what she might be in season 2, but wouldn't it be awesome if Guinan was like a regular?
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be so awesome, because I've always wanted to see more of Guinan.
I know, me too.
And
where's Whoopi? What is she doing? Why isn't she on the show more?
Yeah. Yeah, all this other career, you know, being in Ghost and, you know, winning Oscars. You know, what was she doing?
I know. She should know where her priorities are.
But I've always heard her say that... you know, she looks very highly on her times at Next Gen. And when
Uhura.
There is a video of the clip from The View, and she is absolutely beclempt over it.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that. You know, that just it just proves to you how much she loved that time. Mm-hmm. And I whether she's on for like, you know, one episode or 10, I'll love it, but I would love to see her be there for the whole season. Like, be there with Picard. Oh my God, that would be so awesome.
That would be so awesome.
Yes.
All right, so that's two votes for the entire season. Whoopi, if you're listening, that's what we think.
Kurtzman, okay. Make it so.
Make it so! anyway, yes. Okay, so why are they made in pairs? Because she said they are made in pairs, as if that's a given. What's the purpose of having two, other than serving the plot so that they can kill Dodge in the beginning and Soji is still around for the show? I'm like,
yeah.
What's the deal there? It just, is it strictly a plot point? Is that the only reason why she just casually tossed off they're made in pairs? Because it doesn't really seem like, why?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hope there's an explanation for that other than we wanted to be able to kill off Dodge and piss everybody off and then bring on Soji so that everybody wasn't pissed off. I hope that's not the case. But if it is, I guess, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's not really well explained, but hopefully it will be.
Yeah. After all, she's going to be on the ship.
What's yes.
Yeah. Allison Pill, whatever her character's name is.
Dr. Agnes Jurati.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's exciting.
Couple other little things, some references to other Trek, you know, other than the ones that you may think of. We had the aforementioned Zahian boyfriend. Of course, Zahians are a race that we see in Discovery, species, I should say. I noticed that the reporter had a Trill and a Tellarite in her crew. So they weren't really focused on too much, but we did kind of see them in the background. We had little shots of them. In Picard's archive, he had models of the Stargazer, the Enterprise E, and the Enterprise E captain's yacht. I didn't see one of the D or the other, you know, ships that we've known that he was on, but we see a Batleth, and this time I could actually say it. I'm having trouble saying that. I don't know why. And a Klingon ceremonial knife. I know there's a name for that, but I can't think of it.
It's the one that the right of a succession knife or whatever. That
yeah.
One. Or was it? No, it was the knife where when he was the
Shadich.
Yes.
Yeah.
For Worf. They showed a picture of that, actually, that scene.
Yes, they did.
So that's where the knife comes from.
Yes. That is the proof that Worf will stay Worf. We also see Picard's book of Shakespeare from his ready room. I think that's what it is. I know
the open book.
Yeah. I think that's where it's from or what it is. And of course, we see the Captain Picard Day banner, and that's I forget what episode that's in.
It's season 7. It's upcoming.
It might be the Pegasus. Might be the Pegasus.
Yeah, it is. That's the episode, the Pegasus. Also, they didn't show this specifically in the episode that I could see, but they showed it in the Ready Room.
Yes.
When it's from Gambit, the two-part episode where Captain Picard's former archaeological... Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's not Gambit.
The Curlin Neskos. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah, it's not Gambit. It's it's the Chase from season 6. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
His old archaeology professor shows up and wants him to go on this archaeological excursion, I guess, with him and find these Professor Galen is who it was, which I guess is why he called himself Galen in Gambit.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah, the what did you call it? The
Curlin Neskos.
Yeah, and it was intact, which meant that it had all the little figurines.
Yes.
Inside of it, which is pretty cool that they had that on there because it was really important to him when his old professor gave that to him. So I didn't see it in the episode, but I saw it when they were talking about that on the Ready Room. So,
yeah,
even though they didn't necessarily show it, it's there. They remembered. So that was cool.
Yeah. Just I looked it up. birth date, July 13th, 2305. So that's when he's supposedly born. And it did show that in while he was looking at the archive. I saw that on screen.
Oh, cool.
Also.
So then they can't add.
Yeah. That's what's assuming it's 2399, then they can't add.
That's right. It could be 2397. Yep.
Yeah.
Because it just says the end of the 97 is close to the end of the century. So,
and for that matter, we could end up where the show starts in 2397 and it takes them 2 years of exploring, you know, whatever, and they end up in 2399 at the end.
Well, I suppose, in fact, we should assume that if they say that he's 92 and it showed specifically his date of birth in the archive, then we should probably assume that it's 2397.
Yeah, I mean.
And so, therefore, it's 2383 when the rogue synth attack happened.
Maybe. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I don't think we have to see, because if they said that. They showed his birth date.
Yeah.
And they said that he's 92.
They haven't said it on screen that he's 92. The producer said he was 92. So anyway, we'll see. But yes, it's possible it could be that. Because they're clearly saying 14 years, but it wouldn't be surprising if they just got that detail wrong. And he's actually 94. Well, anyway, we'll see. The only other thing that I had, there was Narek. He had this like black thing in or around his ear, and I could not figure out what that was. It almost looked like a clump of hair, but it was noticeable. Did you notice it?
I did.
Yeah. No idea what it is, though. All right. Let's move on to, unless you have something else, news and info. We don't have a lot, but so we'll start with an opening a shipwide announcement. I wanted to point out for international viewers, because there's been some confusion that the show would be shown like on the 24th, and apparently, unlike Netflix, which it was being shown like midnight of the next day in like Pacific time, it appears that they are using the Luxembourg office of Amazon Prime, which is, I guess, their European headquarters, and they are using Central European time. So that episode was actually aired quite a few hours earlier than originally thought. So you may want to, if you're in a country that watches via Amazon Prime and you're used to the time that it was available for Netflix, you may want to look at that again, because I think you're going to be able to see it earlier. And Fred, of course, says, which doesn't help much when you have a hard day's work next day, not able to watch at midnight and not the next day either. Well, I don't know, Fred. Maybe you'll figure out like to take a nap or something before. But and I also, after I wrote this note, I found out that in Canada, on Crave TV, which is the streaming provider that has Picard and Discovery, it was also available at midnight. So it was actually available like on Crave at the same time it was available on CBS All Access. So I think now it's actually showing that ahead of when it does on the CTV Sci-Fi channel, which used to be called Space. So two other little things. We mentioned the Ready Room, and it appears, I believe that those episodes will be coming out 7 a.m. Pacific time. So, you know, several hours after it's the episode's release, and you know, you'll be able to see that on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, on a few other platforms. I think IGTV, which I've had never even heard of before. I guess it's something Instagram, and CBS All Access. And there was a little bit of confusion, so I don't think that this is actually an official podcast from CBS, but it was mentioned on Daily Star Trek News that a new podcast has come out called, very similar to our own, the Star Trek Picard Podcast. And from Deadline, they released their first episode, and I don't think it's official, but it's sponsored by CBS All Access. But then again, so are we. But they did have some great guests, which I guess, you know, because they're Deadline, they can get some extra pull. Patrick Stewart, Alex Kurtzman, Michael Chabon, and Akiva Goldsman. So, but it's a pretty short podcast, about 25 minutes or so. All right, so that's it as far as news. I'm sure there are other things, and, you know, yes, there's a premiere and all of that, but that's kind of old news at this point. To submit your feedback, Ruthie, why don't you tell people how to contact us?
All right. If you want to submit feedback or connect with us, you can go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. You can submit text or audio there. You can call us at 216-232-6146. You can tweet us at PicardCast. You can send us an email, PicardCast@talkthroughmedia.com. Or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts.
And a great way you can support us is to share our posts on Twitter and Facebook. Now, for Facebook, the ones that are that come through on the Talk Through Media, Star Trek Talk Through Media podcast Facebook group are not shareable, but we will post the important ones at our Talk Through Media page, which is at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. Then those can be shared. So when we post about a new episode, help us out and share that with other people. And you can also help us out by rating us in Apple Podcasts or a podcast client of your choice. While you're there, give us a rating review. Anyone who does this, we are going to give a big shout out, and we could really use some reviews on Apple Podcasts, especially for the Picard cast. We don't have any reviews yet in the US, so we could really use that. If you would be so kind to give us a nice, positive, hopefully 5-star review, we would be in your debt. And there is podchaser.com, and that is another way that you can rate us. Sign up for that, and you can follow us there and give us a rating or review like James has. Our Patreon, and we mentioned that we'll have some new content, actually probably within the next week. Patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And we want to thank our Patreon subscribers, James Robbins, Lawrence Todd, Fred Petrie, Clint McCollum, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogel, Brian Shiro, and Christoph, I hope I'm going to get this correct, Lechleitner. So subscribe to us on whatever podcast client that you have. And there are three ways you can get this podcast. First is through the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed. We also have these featured on the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed. And if you just want Picard, there is the Star Trek Picard cast feed. You don't need to subscribe to them all three, only if you want to. It's all the same content. And you can also hear me on the Walking Dead talk through, and that podcast will be back in about 5 weeks, I think. And I will probably only be on it occasionally going forward. Our next episode is season 1, episode 2, titled Maps and Legends. We don't know who has written it, but we do know that Hanley M. Culpepper has directed this one as well. And we don't have a description, but that will be our next exciting episode of Star Trek Picard. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.